Welcome, everybody. Okay, so do the visualization with the Buddha's Bodhisattvas in the space in front of you. And yourself surrounded by all the sentient beings. And recall that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are looking at you with total acceptance and a wish to help and guide you to full awakening, to the fulfillment of your utmost potential. And we're surrounded by all the sentient beings. They're all in human form. So we don't escape from sentient beings in order just to put our minds on the holy beings. Because a good part of our reason for turning to the holy beings for guidance is so that we can learn how to best benefit sentient beings. And so think that you're leading the sentient beings and taking refuge and generating bodhicitta. Let's cultivate our motivation. Although we may talk about cause and effect, and karma and its results are one type of cause and effect, when we look at our mind, we don't always doesn't seem like we actually take cause and effect into our consciousness in terms of how we see the world. So, for example, I think we all have the feeling of I am here and I deserve happiness. I am entitled to happiness. And especially living in a country where we talk about freedom, then we think, yeah, the world owes me something. I'm entitled to be happy. And yet, in saying that, we're not taking into consideration the fact that we have to create the causes of happiness. And that, speaking from a karmic viewpoint, the causes of happiness are virtuous actions, actions done with kindness, with a balanced, impartial mind, with wisdom, with care about other living beings. So we kind of sometimes block out that part of creating the causes for happiness, either in this life or previous lives, and then expect happiness and get angry when we don't get what we want. And that anger makes us miserable now and involves us in more negative actions, whereby we create the causes of more misery. So spend a couple of minutes and really think about how your happiness depends on the karma that you create and also the efforts of other living beings who provide the conditions so that that karma can ripen, who give us the possessions and work in society to produce the various things that we use. So look at your happiness that you have and see how they depend on causes, yourself and others. And then see if you, how much, to what extent you take that into consideration as you live your life, and to what extent there's just the expectation that I deserve to be happy. And then think, rather than focusing so much on my happiness, me getting what I want, expecting me to have it, what would happen if I changed my focus and directed it towards other living beings and cared about their happiness, them receiving respect, them being treated well? What would happen if I put my energy in the direction of making that happen for other living beings, rather than focusing so much with the expectation that I deserve it? So in that way, imagine exchanging yourself for others in terms of who is more important, whose benefit are you going to work for? And watch and see if there's some resistance in the mind to this, And if there is, what is that resistance? And in that way, generate the bodhicitta, aspiring to be of the greatest benefit to living beings, and for that reason, seeking full awakening. Are you getting some sense of underlying assumptions about who you are and how you should be treated that you've never realized consciously that are there? You all look like you just woke up. Nobody's saying yes. Nobody's saying no. Yes.
What did come up in that meditation was that the sense of entitlement is completely put together with all the identities that I have created. So every identity comes with this sense that all, just by being that, I deserve this. Mm-hmm. And that the whole idea of causality doesn't even have to enter the picture because of the identity that I have prescribed myself.
Mm. That the identity automatically entitles you to certain things. Yeah. Not that we have to create the causes either in this life by being kind or creating the karmic causes to receive it. Yeah. It's just I'm me and the world owes me. Yeah. That's famous phrase, I want what I want when I want it, and I deserve it. And then when the thought of giving that up comes, and other people having that, and us enabling them to have it, us putting other beings first, then you feel something kind of shake inside, like, what's going to happen to me if I do this? Yeah. If I volunteer to do that job, oh no. Yeah. If I encourage somebody else at work so that they get the promotion, if I praise somebody else at school, then they'll get the higher grade. No, whatever it is, I will lose out. And that is totally against our rules of the universe. I should never lose out. Never. Right? Never. 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 Okay. So, you know, that's just this underlying assumption there. And it operates and cuts us off from other living beings. And I remember Lama Yeshe one time, when this was back in 1982, 83, we had just finished a retreat, and he was sitting on his seat, and he said, "You people," and he picked up his mala, and he said, "Your mantra should be, I am the servant of others, I am the servant of others, I am the servant of others." He looked at us, "I am the servant of others." And we all nodded, "Yes, yes." Yeah, because we all thought bodhicitta was wonderful. "Yes, I am the servant of others. After I make sure that I'm happy and well cared for." But that caveat wasn't in Lama's mantra. It wasn't, "I am the servant of others after I'm fat and happy." It was, "I'm the servant of others, period." Yeah. But usually we think others are the servant of me. Okay, so we have a couple of questions here. So, during the teachings, we talked about attachment to praise and approval, and it was suggested to avoid getting defensive when a friend seems to be upset and accusing us of wrongdoing. Okay, yeah. Why not getting defensive? Yeah. Why was it suggested not getting defensive? What are the disadvantages of getting defensive? Or are there only advantages? Yeah, well, listen what follows here. "I used to think that my efforts to try and fix their upset, which entailed trying to help them see my good intentions and convince them that they misinterpreted my behavior, were necessary to my bodhisattva practice. I was applying auxiliary bodhisattva precept number 17, abandon neglecting those who are angry with you by not trying to pacify their anger." So when somebody's angry at you, shouldn't you be a people pleaser and try and do backflips and pacify their anger? Shouldn't you try and explain yourself? It's not being defensive. You're just explaining your intentions because they misunderstood. Shouldn't we try and do that? Isn't that how bodhisattvas react when people are upset with them and mad at them? What's the difference? Oh, motivation. What's motivation if I'm defensive?
Defending.
Yeah, defending my honor, my esteem, my goodness. Yeah. What are the disadvantages of being a people pleaser? Does that have to do with motivation too? Shouldn't we, bodhisattvas are supposed to please sentient beings. Shouldn't we all be people pleasers? Says the star people pleaser. Although you have some close competition, kiddo. What's why not be a people pleaser? Is there something wrong with your motivation?
Attachment.
But I'm pleasing them. Oh, so they'll like me. So I don't really care about them. I care more about myself being liked. And they're a prop whose duty it is to like me so that I feel good about myself. Now, what about a bodhisattva? Why would a bodhisattva, or how would a bodhisattva try and soothe somebody else's anger? Would a bodhisattva just say, "You're angry and you've totally misunderstood the situation. I wouldn't try and harm you. I have bodhicitta. I care more about you than I care about myself. So why are you mad at me? I have a good motivation." Does a bodhisattva step in and say that? What does a bodhisattva do when somebody's mad at them?
Skillfully.
It's very interesting. This side of the room is totally silent.
There are no people pleasers over there, I think.
Yeah.
Skillfully, the bodhisattva can help that person both first calm down and then reflect on how they can work with their upset, guide them in that way without defending themselves at all.
You're telling me to work with my upset?
Skillfully, I said. Skillfully.
Yeah, how do you do that skillfully? I'm not going to listen to you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A bodhisattva would think about that they've created the causes for someone to be angry at them and look at their own mind and work with their own mind rather than trying to change the other person's mind.
Yeah. Well, that's one part of it. A bodhisattva, you know, instead of jumping in right away and saying, "You've seen things all wrong," would reflect, "This is the wheel of sharp weapons returning upon me for harsh speech or jumping to conclusions or whatever that I've done about other people in the past. So no need for me to get upset now." But there's still this precept to try and help others to pacify their anger. Okay. Hold on. Oh, I'd better call on somebody from this side of the room if they decide to talk. Yeah. Please grace us with your speech. Don't laugh at her. It's everybody on that side of the room. Yes?
As a first response, maybe trying to give empathy to the person who's angry.
Uh-huh.
And then when, depending on how that person responds, whether they're open to that or not, then when they may seem receptive, pick a time to offer where you were coming from and see if that there's space for them to receive that.
Yeah, exactly. Firstly, first when you're dealing with somebody who's upset, they cannot hear anything you're saying if you try and explain to them how they're wrong and you had a good intention. It's really important that you empathize with them first. It seems like you're upset about something. Yeah. It seems like, do you need respect? No, something that would let the other person know that you understand and you are acknowledging what they're feeling. And then that helps them to feel heard. They calm down. And then you can, if your actions were misinterpreted, then you could explain it. But if they're upset because we had a sneaky motivation that we're trying to cover up, then apologize immediately. That's the easiest way. Yeah, rather than defend. So that way you avoid defense, being defensive, you avoid people pleasing. Yeah. You show empathy and you follow that precept to help pacify somebody's anger. Okay. Then the second, and recognize that it may take people some time to calm down. It's not like, well, I said one empathic statement to you, so now you should be ready to hear my defense. No, sometimes it takes them a day or so, or even longer, to calm down. Yeah, so you have to continue the discussion. Okay, and then the second question was, is there group karma or collective karma? The answer is yes. Okay, when we do something together with other people for a particular purpose, we accumulate the karma of everybody in the group who does that action for a specific purpose. Okay, if you look in the foundation of Buddhist practice, in the chapters on karma, there's a section on collective karma. Yeah. So, for example, today, you know, we came here for the purpose of learning the Dharma and to, you know, learn how to be better human beings. So we create that collective karma, which is virtuous because the reason we came together was virtuous. Okay. If you go to a KKK meeting, you're with another group for another purpose, and that purpose is not so virtuous, so you collect that collective karma. Okay, so back to page 14. We are speeding along. And the section is called Karma and Its Effects. Causality functions in so many areas of our lives: physics, chemistry, biology, politics, psychology, economics, sociology, to name a few. So karmic causation is not the only type of causation. Okay. In these areas, understanding causality enables us to shape our environment and our experiences. In addition to these systems of causality, the law of karma and its effects influences us. So the law of karma, actions of our own body, speech, and mind, and the effects that our actions bring, involve the ethical dimension of our lives. Okay, so this is quite important. Our actions have an ethical dimension. They aren't just actions that get lost. Yeah. So that fact that it has to do with ethics answers the question, why was I born me? Yeah. Did you ever think that? Why was I born me? Why wasn't I born somebody else? Okay. Why do things happen the way they do? What are the long-term results of my thoughts and deeds? The law of karma and its effects explain the link between our actions and our experiences and demonstrate why ethical conduct is so vital to having happy lives. Yeah, so understanding this and developing deep confidence in it is really a key to having a good life. Yeah. So that when we face adversity, instead of, why me? I'm the victim. Yeah, the world broke the first rule, which is, I should always be happy. I deserve it. The world broke that rule. Yeah, to say, I created the cause for it. That doesn't mean we're bad people, doesn't mean we deserve to suffer. It simply means I created the cause. So this whole idea of punishment, and you're bad because you did a negative action, so you deserve punishment, that is not an assumption that underlies the doctrine of karma. Yeah. So we should not think when we experience suffering, I deserve to suffer because I did something wrong, and therefore I am a horrible person. Okay. If you think like that, that is your own, the Tibetans call it namtok, superstition, mental proliferations. Nowadays, it's called conspiracy theories. Okay? So you're writing your own conspiracy theory and then believing in it. And it may have come because that's what you were taught when you were little. But the nice thing about being an adult is we can now reassess what we were taught when we were little and stop believing in some of the things that we now can see with our wisdom are not true. Yeah. In other words, not everything we were taught when we were little is true. Imagine that. We believed it. We were little. Of course we believed it. But now we can think about it and change. So karma means action and refers to volitional actions done by our body, speech, or mind. Karma has to do with our intentions, our mental plans, verbal communications, and physical deeds are all preceded by an intention. So if we're planning something, if we communicate something verbally, if we do an action, it's all preceded by an intention. From the viewpoint of their causes, actions done with wholesome or virtuous intentions, such as kindness, love, compassion, wisdom, care, friendliness, and so forth, bring happy results, and thus are called constructive or positive actions. Actions motivated by unwholesome intentions, such as anger, resentment, and greed, are considered and called destructive or negative. Here we see the hypocrisy and manipulation in spiritual practice do not work for our benefit. We cannot fool the law of karma. We can fool other living beings and make them think that we are different than we actually are. But we can't fool the law of karma, because that's a natural law and how things are functioning in our mind. While we can look good to others, if our intentions are rotten, so are the actions motivated by them. Yeah. I was very heartened when I first heard this about Buddhism, you know, because it makes hypocrisy hypocrisy doesn't work. And I don't like hypocrisy. Of course, my hypocrisy isn't actual hypocrisy. Yeah, my hypocrisy is different. Just like my lies are not real lies. They're things that are just helping other people not to get upset, creating peace. Okay. And similar with my hypocrisy, I don't let other people down. So that's a kindness to other people, isn't it? That I should pretend to be what I'm not and pull the wool over their eyes. Then they aren't disappointed. That sounds like a bodhisattva practice, doesn't it? Like this one. Doesn't it? It sounds like it. Yeah. What's wrong with it? Motivation. Yeah. One is, you know, has a totally rotten, self-centered motivation. And we paint it over with an explanation of being compassionate to other beings. Then when we hear this, we then proceed to go to the opposite extreme of, okay, I'm not going to be hypocritical anymore. So when I am mad, I will let people know I'm mad. I'm not going to pretend I'm okay anymore. And when I think they're greedy, I'm going to tell them so right to their face. And I'm going to be spontaneous and not suppress any of my emotions anymore. Because if I suppress my emotions, I'm being a hypocrite, and I'm done being a hypocrite. So world, you just have to endure me now. That's, you know, they wrote about that and how to influence people and have friends. That was a big thing of don't do that. But you see, we're such extremists. Either we're hypocrites or we decide that we shouldn't be hypocritical. So then we just say, well, this emotion is in my mind, so I'm going to tell people. And I think this about them. I'm just going to tell them right to their face. And they have to deal with it. Yeah, that's pretty extreme, isn't it? It's just as extreme as being a hypocrite. Okay, so what we need is something, yeah, that is not hypocritical and not in your face. Okay, which means it comes back to us to improve our motivation and improve our state of mind. If we do that, then we aren't going to be hypocrites. And we're not going to have a ton of emotions that we're going to dump on other people, whether they want them or not. Okay. So the way out is to take responsibility. His Holiness speaks a lot about whatever you're doing, there's privileges and there's responsibilities. Yeah. And to really think about that in our life. Because we want the privileges, but we don't want the responsibilities. And that doesn't work in our life. If we want the privileges, then we have the responsibility. And our chief responsibility is to tame our own mind. Because if we don't do that, then everything else that comes out is going to be either hypocrisy or in-your-face vomit. Which is what it is, isn't it? You know, I feel what I feel. And the other person is hit with our resentment, our anger, you know, everything that we've been storing up for a long time, half of which does not involve them at all, but is a reply to something that happened in the past that we didn't deal with. So now we spit it out over the first person. Okay, so privilege and responsibility. This is something that really needs some contemplation. We can also differentiate actions based on the long-term results they bring. Through supernormal powers, the Buddha was able to see the karmic causes of sentient beings' present experiences. He labeled as constructive those actions bringing long-term happiness to the person who does them, and designated as destructive or negative those actions that lead to that person's suffering. Actions that lead to neither particularly pleasant nor unpleasant results are termed neutral, like sweeping the floor. Unless you're really mad when you're sweeping the floor, in which case you're creating karma, or you're practicing thought training, thinking away your cleaning sentient beings' afflictions, in which case you're creating good karma while you're sweeping the floor, not sleeping on the floor. Thus, our actions are neither inherently virtuous nor non-virtuous. They become so in relation to their long-term results. The Buddha did not invent the law of karma and its effects. So we cannot claim, we cannot get mad at the Buddha for making a series of laws that we don't agree with, because he did not say, if you do this, it's good. If you do that, it's bad. Because, why? Because I declare it that way. No, he just described what he saw. Okay. In the same way, Galileo did not invent gravity. He just described it. Okay, so the Buddha did not invent the law of karma and its effects, nor does he give out rewards and punishments. He merely described how this natural law operates. What are the physical and verbal and mental actions that cause long-term unhappiness to the person who does them? The Buddha observed 10 unwholesome paths of action. 3 are done with our body: killing, stealing, and unwise or unkind sexual behavior. 4 with our speech, and speech can include writing. It includes all of our communication, sign language, writing, so on. Okay, so there the 4 negativities of speech: lying, creating disharmony with our speech, harsh words, and idle talk. And then 3 by way of our thoughts: coveting, malice, and wrong views. The simple act of restraining ourselves from these 10 creates constructive karma. Okay, so just stopping ourselves from doing those 10 is something virtuous. In other words, when we are tempted to speak harshly, for example, restraining ourselves from harshly criticizing the other person is a wholesome action that will bring happiness. So is taking outside an insect in our house instead of swatting or stomping on it. Okay, so avoiding doing the negative ones plus doing their opposites are all virtuous actions. Yeah. Furthermore, doing the opposite of the 10 non-virtuous paths of actions create constructive karma. So saving life instead of killing, protecting others' possessions instead of stealing, using sexuality wisely and kindly, yeah, or being celibate, speaking truthfully, creating harmony with our speech, speaking kindly and encouraging others in constructive actions, speaking at appropriate times and in an appropriate way. Really? You mean I have to be careful about when I mouth off? I have to speak at an appropriate time? I feel like talking right now, so just be quiet and let me talk. Yeah? And I feel like saying this, so listen. Yeah. I don't care if you're busy and you have something else to do. I don't care if you don't want to hear my story again of how I am mistreated by the universe. You're going to sit there and listen to me. Okay, and if I feel like gossiping about people, you got to listen. And if I feel like bad-mouthing somebody else at work, you got to listen. Of course, I can't make you listen, so you can tune it out. And you can walk away. But I have a right to say what I say, no matter whether it hurts your feelings or not. Because I have the First Amendment, so I have freedom of speech, and as long as I don't say there's fire when there's not fire, I can say anything else I want. And if it hurts your feelings, if it offends you, if it's a lie, if it creates disharmony, if it creates violence, well, violence, I have to be sneaky. I can't directly create the violence. I have to do it that way. But I am free to do that. I live in a free country. Yes, maybe legally you're free, but karma functions. And karma does not depend on the legislature. Yeah, there's many things that are legislated as wrong that actually are good. And there are things that are perfectly permissible that create horrific karma. Okay, so don't be fooled by that, you know. And watch, we need to watch our speech. If we want to live in a happy world, if we don't care about living in a happy world, then it doesn't matter. But then please take your harsh speech and face a wall and talk to yourself. You know, please don't put it on the rest of us. Okay, speaking truthfully. Truthfully. I have to speak truthfully. Whatever I believe is true, because I would never believe anything wrong. And even if I know it's wrong, it becomes true when I believe it. And even if I still know it's wrong, I have freedom of speech. And as long as what I say benefits me, it is true and it is good. Right? Right? I have free speech. And anyway, everybody else lies. And what I'm saying isn't a lie. It's just it's alternative facts. That's what it is. It's alternative facts. There is no truth. Everything is relative. Everything depends on your perspective. Yeah? Even Buddhists say that. Yeah, the fluid in the thermos I see as water, the gods see as nectar, the hungry ghosts see as pus and blood. So you see, it all depends on your perspective. Even if you're a Buddhist, there's no real thing that is true. So whatever is convenient for actualizing your aims is fine, right? Right? I mean, all these other people lie and people ignore it. Yeah. The legislatures make outrageous policies. Yeah. So that in a free land, you are inhibited from voting. But it just all depends on your perspective. Yeah. We are instituting, you know, there's so much doubt about the last election that we're really instituting laws so that nobody can cheat anymore. Yeah. So one of the laws to prevent you from cheating is nobody is going to give you snacks and water while you're waiting in the hot sun 8 hours to get to the voting place. Because giving you water and snacks will corrupt the voting system. And, you know, you can't go on Sundays. And, you know, if you really want to vote, then if you are an hourly worker, you miss out on a day's pay. Especially if you live in a neighborhood where there are long, long lines to vote instead of a neighborhood where you are in and out in 15 minutes. But we are protecting the election. We are protecting democracy. I'm telling you the truth. Okay. Speaking kindly and encouraging others in constructive actions. Speaking at appropriate times and in an appropriate way. And having thoughts giving love of giving, love, and forgiveness, and correct views. Thoughts of forgiveness? Yeah. Yeah, I have a lot to forgive other people for because they have really blown it. But I don't need to apologize to anybody. Apology is for weak people. Yeah, forgiveness is for weak people. Hold your grudge. Yeah. Don't diminish your pride and your honor by admitting you were wrong. Because we're never wrong. Why should I apologize to somebody? It wasn't my mistake to start with. Because remember, I always have virtuous motivations. And I always tell the truth from my perspective. So it's okay. Do you see how our minds work? Yeah? It's incredible. But the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas put up in trying to help us. What they have to put up with is astounding. Yeah. So the law of karma and its effects has four basic principles. First, karma is definite. That is, happiness comes only from constructive actions, never from destructive ones. And suffering arises only from destructive actions, never from constructive ones. While the specific way in which a particular action will ripen is not fixed or predetermined, very important, things are not fated, they are not predetermined. Although things are not fixed and predetermined, destructive actions will always bring misery and constructive ones will always bring happiness. Thus, trying to justify our harmful actions by saying they will bring good results doesn't work. Okay, so here the example of seeds is helpful. If you plant daisies, you are always going to get daisies. Yeah, but, yeah, sometimes your daisies wilt after a day. Sometimes your daisies don't grow big, they're small. Sometimes your daisies get eaten by insects. Sometimes, the seeds are fried, it's too hot. Okay. So you're never going to get anything but daisies, but what your daisies look like, or even if you have daisies at all, because somebody could go through and pull the seeds out, you know, none of that is fixed. So that's going to depend a lot on either other karma or the decisions we make in a certain lifetime. Okay, second, a small action can bring a strong or long-lasting result in much the same way as a small seed can grow into a huge tree. And I love this time of year, if you've been noticing, all the itty-bitty trees that are just coming up. Yeah, some of them, I mean, they're in the path, they're this big. Yeah. They're itty-bitty, and you think, you know, that used to be a seed, and it sprouted, and it's this big, and then you look at the big trees around here, and you think, that has the potential to grow into that. That's astounding, because when we look at the big tree, we never think that it was once this big. Yeah? So a small action can bring a strong or a long-lasting result. For this reason, it is important not to rationalize our negative behavior by saying, for example, it was just a little lie. Similarly, being lazy thinking, it's just a small action of kindness and isn't of much significance, so why bother? Yeah. So those are all lost opportunities to create good karma. Third, if we don't create the cause, we don't experience the effect. So we ourselves are the creator of our experience, not another person and not an external God. When we refrain from stealing, for example, we will not experience poverty or having our own possessions stolen. If we don't practice Dharma and create the causes for happiness, happiness will not come our way. The great masters say that simply praying for worldly happiness or for spiritual awakening is not sufficient. We have to create the causes for it through our actions. Yeah. So fourth, karmic seeds, the quote-quote residual energy left on our mind streams after we have done an action, yeah, that karmic potential does not get lost. We will definitely experience the results of our actions unless intervening forces arise. In the case of destructive actions, doing purification practices make the results of those actions weaker, shorter, or postpone when we will experience the results. The strongest purification practice is meditating on the nature of ultimate reality, the emptiness of inherent existence. And direct perception of this, of emptiness, has the power to uproot the seeds of destructive karma from our mind streams so that they can never ripen in suffering. Anger and wrong views, on the other hand, have the power to interfere with the ripening of our virtuous actions, delaying the result or lessening the duration or the strength of the happy result. Therefore, we want to take special care not to destroy our own future happiness by allowing anger or distorted conceptions to govern our minds. Once complete with three branches of the preparation, the actual action, and the conclusion, our actions mature or ripen into three kinds of results. One of the results has two branches, so sometimes it talks about four results. So the three branches of a complete karma are the preparation, the action itself, and the completion of karma, of the action. So in other explanations, they talk about four branches. So either one is okay. Okay, so the preparation involves our motivation. We have a wholesome or unwholesome intention to do something. There's a certain thing or person that is the object of our intention, and we identify the person or thing correctly. So that's all involved in the preparation. Then the second is the action is done. Either we do it ourselves or we ask or force another person to do it. And third, finally, the action is completed, fulfilling the aim that motivated it. And in addition, we rejoice in doing the action. Okay, then the three types of results may come from actions done with all the branches complete. So these results usually come in future lives, but especially strong actions may bring the results in this very lifetime. So the three types of results are the ripening result, which is the body and mind we will take in a future life, what realm we're born into. Okay. The second is the causally concordant life, causally concordant result, which is of two types. The first type is the experiential result. That is, we will experience a situation similar to the one our actions caused others to experience. So it's not exactly the same. It's not I hit you and you hit me. Okay, but I hit you, and then in a future life, I'm in an accident and I get injured. Okay, so something that's similar. And then the second branch of the causally concordant result is behavioral. That is, we will tend to do that action again in the future. Yeah. Because it's true, the more we do something, the easier it becomes. And then the environmental result, which is our experience of the environment and the climate where we live. Yeah, so where we happen to settle is also indicative of the karma that we created before. And so climate change that's happening, you know, part of it is coming from causes we're creating now in this life. Part of it, if we experience the result, is the environmental result of actions we did in previous lives too. In the case of lying, for example, the ripening result is an unfortunate rebirth. We don't know exactly which one. The causally concordant experiential result is others lying to us and other people not believing our speech even when we do tell the truth. The causally concordant behavioral result is our tendency to lie repeatedly and to think nothing of it. And the environmental result is living in a filthy place where people are corrupt and dishonest. Yeah, so you lie, then you get reborn in a place where there's corruption and dishonesty. It makes sense, doesn't it? You know, when you think about these causes and results, which we will get into a lot in this text, yeah, then you can see how they make sense. So verses 9 to 47 of the Wheel of Sharp Weapons speak of the unpleasant causally concordant experiential results we are currently experiencing and what actions we did in the past to bring them about. So that's like the verse I spoke about yesterday, you know, that having a serious disease is the result of having injured others' bodies. Okay. So this discussion enables us to identify our self-grasping ignorance and self-centered thought as the chief culprits that activate the afflictions that in turn motivated the destructive actions we did in the past that led to our present difficulties. Okay, so you see a sequence. Yeah, self-grasping ignorance and self-centered thought leads to afflictions, leads to actions, leads to unpleasant results. Yeah, when we do negative actions, okay? When we create virtuous actions, as ordinary beings, we still have afflictions. Yeah, then we have a virtuous mental factor, a virtuous action, and a happy result. Yeah, ignorance itself is not negative. Yeah. So understanding this enables us to stop blaming others for our misery by realizing that the principal causes of it lie within our own minds. It also will make us more careful about the actions we choose to do in the future, because we will be more aware that we are creating our own futures through our present choices and actions. Okay. Verses 54 to 89, yeah, focus on the causally concordant behavioral result, the habitual actions and attitudes underlain by self-grasping ignorance and self-centered thought. Those actions that we repeatedly do, which create the causes for future suffering. Okay. So learning these will make us more mindful of the values and ethical precepts we want to implement to guide our lives, and it will also strengthen our introspective awareness so that we will be more aware of what we are thinking, saying, and doing, thus giving us more choice to either continue these actions or disengage from them. Okay? So this freedom to make choices is in our own mind. This does not depend on legislature, and it does not depend on where we're living or other things. We have that freedom to choose virtuous actions and non-virtuous actions. Yeah. And for the Tibetans who were imprisoned after the communist takeover of their country, those that knew the Dharma, even in prison, created virtue because the virtue originates in the mind. Yeah. Okay, so it also strengthens our introspective awareness so that we will be more aware of what we are thinking, saying, and doing, thus giving us more choice to either continue these actions or disengage from them. Instead of operating on automatic with little self-awareness of our choices and actions, we will be able to guide ourselves with wisdom. Okay, so instead of being repulsive, instead of living on, not repulsive, impulsive, yeah, sometimes they're the same, but sometimes they're different. Instead of, kind of justifying our actions, we have a choice here. In short, our minds are the creator of our experience. As the Buddha said in the Dharmapada, this is the first and second verses in this text. We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world. Speak or act with an impure mind, and trouble will follow you, as the wheel follows the ox that draws the cart. We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world. Speak or act with a pure mind, and happiness will follow you as your shadow, unshakable. Okay, so we have that choice with our thoughts, you know, and we can see examples, you know, when Martin Luther King was imprisoned, when Bishop Tutu was imprisoned, Nelson Mandela, when he was in prison. These people used their time in prison to create incredible virtue by how they thought, yeah, and by refining how they wanted to act. So it shows us there's always that thought. And it sometimes is difficult to overcome the afflictions that want to run the show, that take away our choices. Yeah. So that's why mental restraint, mental discipline is necessary. Okay. So.